Okay, so this is our Visakha Puja gathering for the circumambulation. And it's like the finale of a weekend of celebration and coming together. So it's been a wonderful weekend. And just to express my delight and gratitude at all the expressions of faith and generosity that have been articulated and expressed, and that so it was a very rich time. I'm beat. I don't know about anybody else. It's too much goodness. I can't take it anymore. and this is of course there's been many things expressed on there around the 30th anniversary and the occasion of that, and then this Visakha Puja is always a time to recollect and reflect on the life of the Buddha, and the Buddha as our refuge, as our focal point for what we're doing, what we aspire to, what we hope for in this life, with this life. And that sense, of course, the Buddha's, this is the commemoration of the Buddha's birth, the awakening, and his passing away. And if you're reflecting on the reality of a human condition, and the Buddha was a human being, and the Buddha was very explicit in pointing that out, that he wasn't a human being. He was subject to birth, aging, sickness, and death. He was subject to karma. He reaped the fruits of karma, but it's also that, and that the fruits of that karma were also all the goodness and the barami that he had developed, and that culminated in his awakening, and also facilitated so much of his impact in the world. But it was also that because he was a human being, he was saying that this is possible for all of us. And that the fruits of a life well lived, and the fruits of living an awakened life are not restricted just to, say, a Buddha. And actually that's there's a term in the speaking of, say, like an arahant is an anubuddha. It's called like one who follows the Buddha. Or following on the Buddha, sort of, so that this is not restricted to just one being, but is this is imminent here and now. It's that santitika dhamma that we say, we santitiko akaliko ehipasiko. This is imminent here and now. It's timeless. It is to be seen for each person. For themselves, so that this opportunity is available to all of us, and I think just in this sense of especially in a gathering like this, we really do have the opportunity to delight in the goodness of others and those who have gone before us, but also to delight in our own good fortune, our own good opportunity to come into contact with the Buddha's teachings, and to have good spiritual friends, companions, mentors, and guides in this life, so that it really is a great opportunity. And I think we're probably going to, in 30 years of Abhayagiri being established, I think this is a record number of people who are here for both monks and and lay people here for circumambulation. I don't know what the statistics are, but I'm just looking at the number of bodies here, and I think it's more than I've seen. So it's something to really be delighted in. So this the sense of the nature of Dhamma, yes, the Buddha was born. He was born a human being. And it's in this human realm that we have the opportunity to be awakened and to be free. We're just relying on understanding of the true nature of things. And it's not, you know, because of some special blessing we get at birth or some special connection that we have with some deity. It's because we are willing to contemplate the reality of this human condition and understand it. And yeah, and then the Buddha was awakened on the night of his under the Bodhi tree, after 6 years of austerities. Everybody knows the story. But it you think in terms of what did the Buddha see on the night of his awakening, and it was an understanding of just the nature of this human condition, in the classical description of it, is the Buddha the first watch of the night, the Buddha reflecting on all his previous births, all of the whole range of his experience, just cover, which is, is, we all have this vast range of experience, and speaking for myself, my knowledge doesn't extend to all of my past lives. I don't disbelieve it. I do believe it, but I don't have that kind of knowledge. But I don't think that it's not correct. I think it's a logical explanation of how of a being and the nature of this mind that keeps looking for something else. So that I've done it since we were born, and we'll keep doing it. And so to be able to have the clarity of relinquishment, and this is something that, just for myself, one of my really meaningful insights. So it's an insight into and I very rarely get imagery or images, and in my mind, I'm not a particularly visual person. Or if I do visualize things, it's pretty mundane. But the image of the Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree, and what was he doing? And he was really just relinquishing everything. The willingness to relinquish everything. His identity, his status, his sense of being an individual. And that was where freedom lies. We constantly sort of defend our personality, we defend our opinions and our views, we protect our moods and our swinging feelings of elation and sorrow, and we suffer because of it. So that willingness to see that freedom lies in complete relinquishment and giving up, and that relinquishing into a pure knowing, a pure awareness, a pure awakening. And that's the essence. And that is accessible to all of us. That's not private property of the Buddhas. This is public property and public knowledge. And it's available to anyone who's willing to lay the foundations of practice. And to just reflecting on that, and the Buddha as a refuge, and the Buddha as a reminder that this is possible. It is something that is not just possible, but is the most worthy thing to be doing with a human life. So that whether we're monastics or we're lay people, that doesn't really matter. What really matters is that we seek peace, and we're willing to give up something for peace, rather than trying to bargain for it somehow. So that sense of this is, and the kind of the beauty of the heart that is really possible. And of course, the Buddha passed away in the same way that we all have to pass away at some point in time, whether it's sooner or later, whether it's with some kind of illness or some other separation. It's just that's inevitable. It's just the nature of having a human body, and to be not to be morbid or fearful about it. It's just this is really natural. Couldn't be more natural. But what is important is that to that recollection of death was okay. When that is the reality, what do we do? Okay, we better do something. Either way, you know, that sense of, I mean, the idiom in the world, yeah, get up off your butt and do something. But also, as meditators, we should maybe get on our butts and do something. So that sense of, okay, yeah, we got to do this practice, and that's and this is where our practice is. You know, all of the good things that we do are a part, and it's so important to be conscious with it's very clear these past days of just the amount of generosity that's been shown, the amount of giving, and it is. Delightful to see and to appreciate and to be a participate in and to recognize, oh, that is, you know, that giving and sharing in all sorts of different ways is an opportunity for uplifting the heart, because whatever we're able to give and share is something that, you know, like beautifies the heart. It just is the nature of giving and also the precepts. We've just determined the precepts, and to do that consciously, to take on that quality of integrity and virtue in a very conscious way is another way of beautifying the human heart, because that opportunity to really live in a responsible way, again, in this human condition, which so often it's easy to get heedless or careless or forgetful or just confused. And that's like the chant that we did was the Buddha's first exclamation and then the Buddha's final exclamation at last instructions. That says, yeah, change is evaya dhamma sankara. Change is the nature of all conditioned things. Appamadena sampade dhati. Perfect yourselves, not being negligent. And he just said, yeah, don't be heedless, don't be careless. This is precious, this opportunity. And to give yourself to the teaching, to the training. And this is part of the both, whether it's dana, sila, bhavana, these are the umbrellas of goodness, what are called the kusala kamapada, the foundations of wholesome action, so that the foundation of generosity and you can and giving, and of course you can extrapolate that into so many different areas of our life. Just giving attention to each other, you know, don't be dismissive of each other. Attend carefully to your relationships with each other. That's a way of giving. Sila, it's a way of, I mean, just really cultivating an integrity in the way that we interact, and it uplifts the heart. Then the bhavana, the cultivation of mindfulness and steadiness of heart, of mindfulness, of samadhi, of insight and understanding, of seeing clearly the true nature of things. These are foundations of bhavana. Literally means to bring into being, and it's often it can be literally translated as meditation, but it's more like a cultivation and development, and that goes. Ajahn Pavlo, who mentioned the image of gardening. Yeah, you're cultivating. You're looking, paying attention to how things grow. And, you know, try not to grow too many weeds. cultivate the flowers, cultivate the vegetables that really sustain you. And it's a really beautiful opportunity to give oneself to. But all of these are also, say, I think, especially in terms of in relationship to the Buddha, that sense of honoring the Buddha. And because this is Visakha Puja, so this is a day to honor the Buddha and the memory of the Buddha, the legacy of the Buddha, and our relationship to the Buddha. What should our relationship with the Buddha be, or to the Buddha be? And I think, to relate to the Buddha from a place of bhati-bhati puja, so that to give honor through our practice, our cultivation, our development. And that's one of the, how do you say, the most direct and true ways to honor the Buddha, honor the legacy of the Buddha, and to really honor ourselves in the sense of that recollection that, oh yeah, I'm a human being. The Buddha said, if you're a human being, you're already gifted with the foundations of what is the basis of awakening. You know, just do it, maybe. So that sense of the patipati puja. And there's many different ways of reflecting on what the how do we do honor to the Buddha? And there are, you know, really many, many, many ways. But what comes to mind is the keeping things within the boundaries of what is the teaching or what is the training that the Buddha laid down and sort of guaranteed. This is the teaching. This is the training. And there's a very short-ish sutta that is given to the Buddha's stepmother, Mahapajapati Gotami, when she wanted to, and she'd been engaged in helping to establish the Bhikkhuni order and dealing with the headaches of leading a community, and she was ready to step back and have a period of practice and to go into retreat. And ask for guidance from the Buddha. And the Buddha said, when you go into retreat, then just pay attention to what is Dhamma, what's Vinaya, what is this truth, what is this training, what is the teaching? And he gave 8 kind of parameters to be able to guide and decide. This is the teaching, this is the training. And of course, the whole of the Buddha's teachings are really an extrapolation of causes and conditions. This is the cause, this is the condition, these are the conditions. And so that what leads to, whatever leads to dispassion and not to passion, this is the teaching, this is the training, this is Dhamma Vinaya. What leads to detachment and not to bondage. So that this sense of the things that lead to cooling and settling and pulling away, not hanging on to, not grasping, not getting caught up in our moods, it's having quality of dispassion. I mean, the world kind of praises this sort of, especially online content. I mean, how do you stimulate yourself? And what kind of stimulation do you get? And and the Buddha said, better to go for dispassion and cooling and settling. That's much more fruitful. But detachment rather than that bondage and get sticking to things. Because this is a very sticky world we live in, and our minds are really sticky. So that this is being able to detach, to pull away, to not get caught up in. Similarly, this is what leads to shedding rather than to accumulating. Again, a sense of that image of letting go, of relinquishment, of putting down, and to not accumulating. Because there is no end to it. What that sense of what is enough? Of course, there's a little story I've told many times about Ajahn Chah, where he was. It was toward the end of his, before he got really ill and became bedridden and not able to speak. And he said, there was a lot of people around, monks and a few monks and lay people, and he just sort of gave this kind of random sort of thing. Oh, you know, Wat Bapong has been here for 25 years now, and there's never really been a rich person come to Wat Bapong. And somebody asked, Lopa, how can you say that? There's been many really wealthy people, really rich and powerful people come to Wat Bapong. They're your disciples. There's many of you are your disciples. And Ajahn Chah, he said, he said they may have money, but they don't know what's enough. So he said, what is actual to be rich is to know what's enough. And so that sense of shedding, not accumulating, is having wealth is not necessarily a source of ease and well-being if it's not enough. And so that just that knowing what's enough is really important. As he said, there's several Thai people here. So he said, so so there is this sense, never quite enough. So that's what this is dumb. This was leading to shedding. And in that same vein, that's this to what leads to fewness of desires, not leading to strong desire. Because that sense of fewness of, even in the Buddha's first discourse, first sermon, the Buddha outlining what is dukkha, the way the Buddha's, the cause of dukkha, ever seeking fresh delight, now here, now there. And that sense, there's always something else. There's always something interesting, something I need, something that would be good to do. And that plays itself out, even if you're, you think of that in the world, but it's the same thing in our, it transposes to our minds, even as spiritual seekers, ever seeking fresh delight. I need to get better samadhi. I need to have this experience. I'm not quite, I haven't had nimittas yet. it's ever seeking fresh delight, now here, now there. And this, what is, this path of the Buddha is leading to shedding, is leading to fewness of desires, and that leading to contentment, not to discontent. So that sense of that ability to be content is really where our happiness is, leading to that which is leading to seclusion rather than to entanglement. So that seclusion isn't necessarily having to run away from people or run away from things, but not to be entangled. Having to have social stimulation all the time, having to have things around one all the time, that ability to sit quietly just to be still. Can we experience stillness in the heart and to be content? I mean, it's an exercise to train ourselves, to encourage ourselves, because there is, if we just are willing to stop a little bit, then stillness is there immediately. The stillness, the silence. It's like Kurt Lumpa Samedo, years and years now, he's been teaching about the sound of silence. And it's not something you get out there. It's something that's with us all the time. It's the sense of the silence of the heart that is not proliferating and spinning off into whatever worry or fear or, you know, the next project. But is silent. Silence, stillness are with us all the time if we're willing to turn our attention. This is Dhamma. This is Vinaya. Also that sense of that which leads to energy and not to laziness. If it leads to energy, bringing up energy, putting forth effort, not slacking off. This is Dhamma. This is Vinaya. That was the, when I came back from, Jin Yaniko and I went to Washington, D.C. for a funeral ceremony, beginning of the month. Seems like ages ago. talking to a monk who has a meditation center in Georgia, and he was telling us about had a visiting Burmese monk go there, and he was a Tripitaka master. He had memorized the whole Tripitaka, 45 volumes, and there's a handful of monks in Burma who have accomplished that, and who are alive still today. They've memorized it, and when they are tested on it, before they're kind of declared as Tripitaka masters, they're given random quotes from the Tripitaka, and they have to pick up the recitation from there and then keep on reciting. And so this 45 volume, and it's not just the Sutta Pitaka, it's Vinaya Pitaka, Abhidhamma Pitaka, the three Pitakas have to be completely memorized and they have to be completely fluid and have to be able to pick up at random times of, I can't even remember our evening chanting sometimes. It astounds me that's the human mind is capable of that. But anyway, the monk asked him, you have this tremendous knowledge and you've got this tremendous skill and with all of the knowledge of Tripitaka, what would you recommend? What is the takeaway? What's the kind of the heart of it, the takeaway from that? What's the essence of that? And the monk just kind of smiled. Don't be lazy. So it's that which leads to energy, not to laziness. This is what accords with Dhamma. This is Vinaya, and so to encourage ourselves to put forth effort. And, we all have our limitations. You have to accept that as well. But to not find too many excuses for ourselves. And then the last quality that the Buddha points to is to be that which leads to being easy to support, not being difficult to support. And so that sense of being support is especially as a monastic, then because it's very clear you have to be, we're supported by others. But as lay people, how do we live together? Can we be easy to get along with? Can we not be difficult to get along with? This is what a keeping Dhamma and Vinaya. you're able to tune into what, you know, what's appropriate, what's skillful, what's beneficial, and be easy to get along with each other. It's tough enough in this human condition as it is without being a pain in the butt. So it's that sense, yeah, being easy to support, easy to get along with. This is we rely on it on that. And these are expressions of loving kindness and compassion. These are expressions of generosity and integrity. And it's how we live it. So the sense, these are aspects of Patibhati Puja, how we honor the Buddha, honor the legacy of the Buddha, honor the principles of the Buddha in our daily life. And this is, say, on a day like Visakha Puja, this is an opportunity for us to come together and do a circumambulation and to do chanting and meditation and take the precepts. And so that to be able to turn everything of our practice and everything in our lives as a Patibhati Puja and bringing things in accord with this Dhamma, with this Vinaya. So offer that for reflection this evening.